noble aspirations, godlike longings, desire for holiness and purity, all are quenched, and in place of spirit the body reigns supreme, dictating its own laws, quenching all moral and intellectual light, and surrounding the spirit with influences and associations of impurity. Such a spirit is in perilous case. The guardians retire affrighted from the presence, they cannot breathe the atmosphere which surrounds it, other spirits take their place, spirits who in their earth life had been victims to kindred vices. They live over again their earthly sensual lives, and find their gratification in encouraging the spirit to base and debasing sin. This tendency of bodily sin to reproduce itself is one of the most fearful and terrible of the consequences of conscious gross transgression of nature's laws. The spirit has found all its pleasure in bodily gratifications, and lo! When the body is dead, the spirit still hovers round the scene of its former gratifications, and lives over again the bodily life and vices of those whom it lures to sin. Round the gin shops of your cities, dens of vice, haunted by miserable besotted wretches, lost to self-respect and sense of shame, hover the spirits who in the flesh were lovers of drunkenness and debauchery. They live the drunkard's life in the body, they live it over again now, and gloat with fiendish glee over the downward course of the spirit whom they are leagued to ruin. Could you but see how in spots where the vicious congregate the dark spirits throng, you would know something of the mystery of evil. It is the influence of these debased spirits which tends so much to aggravate the difficulty of retracing lost steps, which makes the descent of Avernus so easy, the return so toilsome. The slopes of Avernus are dotted with spirits hurrying to their destruction, sinking with mad haste to ruin. Each is the center of a knot of malignant spirits, who find their joy in wrecking souls and dragging them down to their own miserable level. Such are they who gravitate when released from the body to congenial spheres below the earth. They and their tempters find their home together in spheres where they live in hope of gratifying passions and lusts which have not faded with the loss of the means of satisfying their cravings. In these spheres they must remain subject to the attempted influence of the missionary spirits, until the desire for progress is renewed. When the desire rises, the spirit makes its first step. It becomes amenable to holy and ennobling influence, and is tended by those pure and self-sacrificing spirits whose mission it is to tend such souls. You have among you spirits bright and noble, whose mission in the earth life is among the dens of infamy and haunts of vice, and who are preparing for themselves a crown of glory, whose brightest jewels are self-sacrifice and love. So amongst us there are spirits who give themselves to work in the sphere of the degraded and abandoned. By their efforts many spirits rise, and when rescued from degradation, work out long and laborious purification in the probation spheres, where they are removed from influences for evil, and entrusted to the care of the pure and good. So desire for holiness is encouraged and the spirit is purified. Of the lower spheres we know little. We only know vaguely that there are separations made between degrees and sorts of vice. They that will not seek for anything that is good, that wallow in impurity and vice, sink lower and lower, until they lose conscious identity, and become practically extinct, so far as personal existence is concerned, so at least we believe. Alas! Alas! Sad and sorrowful is the thought. Mercifully, such cases are rare, and spring only from deliberate rejection by the soul of all that is good and ennobling. This is the sin unto death of which Jesus told his followers, the sin against the Holy Spirit of God of which you are told. The sin, viz., of rejecting the influences of God's holy angel ministers, and of preferring the death of vice and impurity to the life of holiness and purity and love. It is the sin of exalting the animal to the extinction of the spiritual, of degrading even the corporeal, of cultivating sensual earthly lusts, of depraving even the lowest tastes, of reducing the human to the level of the lowest brute. In such the divine essence is quenched, the baser elements are fostered, forced, developed to undue excess. They gain absolute sway, they quench the spirit, and extinguish all desire for progress. the vice perpetuates itself, and drags the wretch who has yielded himself to the animal enjoyments further and further from the path of progress, until even the animal becomes vitiated and diseased. The unhealthily stimulated passions prey on themselves, and the voice of the spirit is heard no more. Down must the soul sink, down and yet down, further and further, until it is lost in fathomless obscurity. This is the unpardonable sin. Unpardonable, not because the Supreme will not pardon, but because the sinner chooses it to be so. Unpardonable, because pardon is impossible where sin is congenial, and penitence unfelt. Punishment is ever the immediate consequence of sin, it is of its essence, not arbitrarily meted out, but the inevitable result of the violation of law. The consequences of such transgression cannot be altogether averted, though they may be palliated by remorse, the effect of which is to breed a loathing for sin and a desire for good. This is the first step, the retracing of false steps, the undoing of error, and by consequence the creation in the spirit of another longing. The spiritual atmosphere is changed, and into it good angels enter readily and aid the striving soul. It is isolated from evil agencies. Remorse and sorrow are fostered. The spirit becomes gentle and tender, amenable to influences of good. The hard, cold, repellent tone is gone, and the soul progresses. So the results of former sin are purged away, and the length and bitterness of punishment alleviated. This is true for all time. It was on this principle that we told you of the folly which dictates your dealings with the transgressors of your laws. Were we to deal with the offenders so, there would be no restoration, and the spheres of the depraved would be crowded with lost and ruined souls. But God is wiser, and we are his ministers. The above are selections from a great number of messages which were written during April and May 1873. By this time the writing had become easy and fluent, and there was, apparently, less difficulty in finding appropriate words. Already several facts and precise records of the life of some spirits had been given. For instance, on May 22, I was writing on quite another subject when the message broke off, and the name of Thomas Augustine Ann was written. It was said that he had been brought into relation with me through his connection with a son of Dr. Spears, a pupil of mine, who displayed great musical ability. I was at this time greatly impressed with the character of the automatic writing and with the information given. I inquired at once if I could ascertain from Ann, through the medium of the spirit doctor, who was writing, any precise facts as to his life. The request was at once complied with, there being no interval between my question and the reply. The date of his birth, 1710, his school, Eton, his instructor in the violin, Festing. His works, or at any rate some 8 or 9 of them, the fact Rule Britannia was contained in the Masque of Alfred, and a number of other minute particulars were given without the least hesitation. Profoundly astonished at receiving such a mass of information, foreign not only to my mind in details, but utterly foreign to my habit of thought 3/4, for I know absolutely nothing about music, and have read nothing on the subject 3/4, I inquired how it was possible to give information so minute. It was said to be extremely difficult, possible only when an extremely passive and receptive state in the medium were secured. Moreover, spirits were said to have access to sources of information so that they could refresh their imperfect recollection. I asked how? By reading, under certain conditions, and with special end in view, or by inquiry, as man does, only to spirits it would be more difficult, though possible. Could my friend himself so acquire information? No, he had too long left the earth. But he mentioned the names of 2 spirits accustomed occasionally to write, who could perform this feat. I asked that one of them should be brought. I was sitting waiting for a pupil in a room, not my own, which was used as a study, and the walls of which were covered with bookshelves. The writing ceased, and after an interval of some minutes another kind of writing appeared. I inquired if the newly arrived spirit could demonstrate to me the power alleged. Can you read? No, friend, I cannot, but Zachary Gray can, and rector. I am not able to materialize myself, or to command the elements. Are either of those spirits here? I will bring one by and by. I will send. Rector is here. I am told you can read. Is that so? Can you read a book? Spirit handwriting changed. Yes, friend, with difficulty. Will you write for me the last line of the first book of the Aeneid? Wait, omnibus erantum terris et fluctibus istus. This was right. Quite so. But I might have known it. Can you go to the bookcase, take the last book but one on the second shelf, and read me the last paragraph on the 94th page? I have not seen it, and do not even know its name. I will curtly prove, by a short historical narrative, that popery is a novelty, and has gradually arisen or grown up since the primitive and pure time of Christianity, not only since the apostolic age, but even since the lamentable union of Kirk and the state by Constantine. The book on examination then proved to be a queer one called Roger's Antipopopriestian, an attempt to liberate and purify Christianity from popery, politicality, and priest rule. The extract given above was accurate, but the word narrative was substituted for account. How came I to pitch on so appropriate a sentence? I know not, my friend. It was by coincidence. The word was changed by error. I knew it when it was done, but would not change. How do you read? You wrote more slowly, and by fits and starts. I wrote what I remembered, and then I went for more. It is a special effort to read, and useful only as a test. Your friend was right last night, we can read, but only when conditions are very good. We will read once again, and write, and then impress you of the book. 3/4 Pope is the last great writer of that school of poetry, the poetry of the intellect, or rather of the intellect mingled with the fancy. That is truly written. Go and take the 11th book on the same shelf. I took a book called Poetry, Romance, and Rhetoric. It will open at the page for you. Take it and read, and recognize our power, and the permission which the great and good God gives us, to show you of our power over matter. To him be glory. Amen. The book opened at page 145, and there was the quotation perfectly true. I had not seen the book before, certainly had no idea of its contents. On the following day I had a long conversation as to the power exercised by spirits on our earth, which was said to be great and widespread. I asked as to the power over individuals, and was pointed to cases where it was said absolute obsession was established. It was said that this power over men was being so widespread, it were wise to place it in the reach only of spirits of integrity and wisdom, and to give conditions for its exercise by them, and so to drive away obsessing and undeveloped spirits, or to materially reduce their sphere of action. It was insisted that spirit action was universal, and that it was a question for man, to a great extent, whether that action was beneficent or not. I asked what character was most suitable for such influence. There are varieties of mediumship, as you know, and there are divers modes in which spirit influence is exercised. Some are selected for the mere physical peculiarities which make them the ready vehicles of spirit power. Their bodily organization is adapted for the purpose of manifesting external spiritual influence in its simplest form. They are not influenced mentally, and information given by the spirits who use them would be of trifling or even foolish nature, and untrustworthy. They are used as the means of demonstrating spirit power, the external invisible agency capable of producing objective phenomenal results. These are known to you as the instruments through whom the elementary phenomena are manifested. Their work is not less significant than that which is wrought through others. They are concerned with the foundation of belief. And some are chosen because of their loving, gentle nature. They are not the channels of physical phenomenal action 3/4 inches many cases, not even of conscious communication with the spirit world. But they are the recipients of spirit guidance, and their pure and gentle souls are cultivated and improved by angel superintendence. By degrees they are prepared to be the conscious recipients of communications from the spheres, or they are permitted with clairvoyant eye to catch stray glimpses of their future home. A loving spirit friend is attracted to them, and they are impressionably taught and guided day by day. These are the loving souls who are surrounded by an atmosphere of peacefulness and purity of love. They live as bright examples in the world, and pass in ripe maturity to the spheres of rest and peace for which their earth life has fitted them. Others, again, are intellectually trained and prepared to give men extended knowledge and wider views of truth. Advanced spirits influence the thoughts, suggest ideas, furnish means of acquiring knowledge, and of communicating it to mankind. The ways by which spirits so influence men are manifold. They have means that you know not of, by which events are arranged as to work out the end they have in view. The most difficult task we have is to select a medium through whom the messages of higher and more advanced spirits can be made known. It is necessary that the mind chosen should be of a receptive character, for we cannot put into a spirit more information than it can receive. Moreover, it must be free from foolish worldly prejudices. It must be a mind that has unlearned its youthful errors, and has proved itself receptive of truth, even though that truth is unpopular. More still, it must be free from dogmatism. It must not be rooted and grounded in earth notions. It must be free from the dogmatism of theologies and sectarianism and rigid creed. It must not be bound down by the fallacies of half-knowledge which is ignorant of its own ignorance. It must be a free and inquiring soul. It must be a soul that loves progressive knowledge, and that has the perception of truth afar off. One that yearns for fuller light, for richer knowledge than it has yet received, one that knows no hope of cessation in drinking in the truth. Again, our work must not be marred by the self-assertion of a positive antagonistic mind, nor by the proud obtruding of self and selfish ends and aims. With such we can do very little, and that little must all tend to the gradual obliteration of selfishness and dogmatism. We desire a capable, earnest, truth-seeking, unselfish, loving spirit for our work. Said we not well that such was difficult to find among men? Difficult indeed, well nigh impossible. We select, then, such a soul as we can best find, and prepared by constant training for its appointed work. We inspire into it a spirit of love and tolerance for opinions that do not find favor with its own mental bias. This raises it above dogmatic prejudice, and paves the way for the discovery that truth is manifold, and not the property of any individual. Store of knowledge is given as the soul can receive it, and, the foundation of knowledge once laid, the superstructure may be safely raised. The opinions and tone of thought are molded by slow degrees, so that they harmonize with the end we have in view. Many and many fail here, and we abandon our work with them, finding that not in this world of yours can they receive the truth, that old earth-born prejudices are firm, dogmatic beliefs ineradicable, and so that they must be left to time, and are to us of no avail. Moreover, a perfect truthfulness and absence of fearfulness and anxiety are the steady growth of our teaching. We lead the soul to rest in calm trust on God and His Spirit teachers. We infuse a spirit of patient waiting for that which we are permitted to do and teach. This spirit is the very reverse of that fretful, restless querulousness which characterizes many souls. Here, too, many fall away. They are fearful and anxious, and beset with doubt. The old theology tells them of a God, who watches for their fall, and of a devil, who lays perpetual traps for them. They wonder at the novelty of our teaching. Their friends are ready to point to so-called prophecies which tell of Antichrist. The old foundations are shaken, and the new are not yet laid, and so the adversaries creep in and tempt the wavering soul, and it fears and falls away, and is useless to us. Yet more, we must eradicate selfishness in all its many forms. There must be no obtruding of self, or we can do nothing. There is nothing so utterly fatal to spirit influence as self-seeking, self-pleasing, boastfulness, arrogance, or pride. The intelligence must be subordinated, or we cannot work upon it. If it be dogmatic, we cannot use it. If it be arrogant and selfish, we cannot come near it. Self-abnegation has been the virtue which has graced the wise and holy men of all time. The seers who bore of old the flag on which was inscribed for their generation the message of progressive truth were men who thought little of themselves and much of their work. They who spoke to the deuce, whose messages you have in your sacred records, were men of self-denying purity and singleness of life. Jesus, when he lived amongst men, was a grand and magnificent instance of the highest self-abnegation and earnestness of purpose. He lived with you a life of pure self-denial and practical earnest work, and he died a death of self-sacrifice for truth. In him you have the purest picture that history records of man's possibilities. They who since have purged the world from error, and have shed on it the beams of truth, have been one and all men of self-denial and earnest devotion to a work which they knew to be that for which they were set apart. Socrates and Plato, John and Paul, the pioneers of truth, the heralds of progress, all have been unselfish souls 3/4 souls who knew naught of self-seeking, of proud aggrandizement, of boastful arrogance. To them, earnestness and singleness of purpose, devotion to their appointed work, forgetfulness of self and its interests, were given in a high degree. Without that they could not have effected what they did. Selfishness would have eaten out the heart of their success. Humility, sincerity, and earnestness bore them on. This is the character we seek. Loving and earnest, self-denying and receptive to truth, with single eye to God's work, and with forgetfulness of earthly aims. Rare it is, rare as it is beautiful. Seek, friend, the mind of the philosopher, calm, reliant, truthful, and earnest. Seek the spirit of the philanthropist, loving, tolerant, ready to help, quick to give the needed aid. Add the self-abnegation of the servant of God who does his work and seeks no reward. For such a character work, high, holy, noble, is possible. Such we guard and watch with jealous care. On such the angels of the Father smile, and tend and protect them from injury. But you have described the perfect character. Ah no! You have no conception of what the perfect spirit is. You cannot know, you cannot even picture it. Nor can you know how the faithful soul drinks in the spirit teaching and grows liker and liker to its teacher. You see not as we see the gradual growth of the seed which it has cost us so much labor to plant and tend. You only know that the soul grows in kindly graces, and becomes more lovely and more lovable. The character we have faintly pictured in such terms as are intelligible to you is not perfect, nor aught but a vague and distant resemblance of that which it shall become. With you is no perfectness. Hereafter is progression and constant development and growth. What you call perfect is blotted and blurred with faults to spirit vision. Yes, surely. But very few such are to be found. Few, few, and none save in the germ. There is the capability on which we work with thankfulness. We seek not for perfection, we do but desire sincerity and earnest desire for improvement, a mind free and receptive, a spirit pure and good. Wait in patience. Impatience is a dire fault. Avoid overcarefulness and anxiety as to causes which are beyond your control. Leave that to us. In patience and seclusion ponder what we say. I suppose a secluded life is favorable for your influence, rather than the busy whirl of town. Here the writing suddenly changed from the minute and the very clear writing of doctor to a most peculiar archaic writing, almost indecipherable, and signed Prudence. The busy world is ever averse from the things of spirit life. Men become absorbed in the material, that which they can see, and grasp, and hoard up, and they forget that there is a future and spirit life. They become so earthly that they are impervious to our influence, so material that we cannot come near them, so full of earthly interests that there is no room for that which shall endure when they have passed away. More than this, the constant preoccupation leaves no time for contemplation, and the spirit is wasted for lack of sustenance. The spiritual state is weak, the body is worn and weary with weight of work and anxious care, and the spirit is well nigh inaccessible. The whole air, moreover, is heavy with conflicting passions, with heart burnings, and jealousies, and contentions, and all that is inimical to us. Round the busy city, with its myriad haunts and vice, its detestable allurements, its votaries of folly and sin, hover the legions of the opposing spirits, who watch for opportunity to lead the wavering to their ruin. They urge on many to their grief hereafter, and cause us many sorrows and much anxious care. The life of contemplation is that which most suits communion with us. It is not indeed to supersede the life of action, but may be in some sort combined with it. It is most readily practiced where distracting cares come not in, and where excessive toil weakens not the bodily powers. But the desire must be inherent in the soul, and where that is, neither distracting cares nor worldly allurements avail to prevent the recognition of a spirit world, and of communion with it. The heart must be prepared. But it is easier for us to make our presence felt when the surroundings are pure and peaceful. At this time I met Mr. Home. It chanced to be the Derby Day, and it was said through him that conditions were so interfered with that spirits could do nothing. On the next day, May 29th, I had some conversation on the subject, in the course of which it was written, 3/4. Any such occasion disturbs the moral conditions, and renders it hard for us to reach you. The spirits who are antagonistic to us are massed together in great force whenever any occasion is offered for them to operate successfully on men who are gathered together for the purpose of gratifying their bodily passions. Yesterday there were vast masses whose passion of cupidity was excited to an enormous degree. They were the point of attack from similar spirits. Others there were whose bodies were wildly excited by intoxicating drinks, others who were feverish with expectation of coming gains, others again plunged into depths of despair by loss of all, the ready prey, these last, of the suggestions of tempting spirits, and even when these baser passions were not actively excited, the moral balance was upset, that calmness and equability which should regulate the temper, and which are as a shield against the foe, were absent, and so a chance of favorable assault was given. For, short of absolute evil, much ground for assault is given by an ill-regulated, disordered mind, by minds unhinged and ill-balanced. Avoid all such. They are frequently the ready agents of spirit influence, but of undeveloped and unwelcome guides. Beware of immoderate, unreasoning, excited frames of mind. For these reasons the occasion to which you refer is one that would make largest demands on the efforts of the agents of good, lest the undeveloped, massed and disciplined for assault, succeed and draw down souls. But what you say would apply to all national holidays? Not necessarily so. So long as a holiday is associated with giving a loose rein to passion, with the immoderate use of fiery, intoxicating poison, with sensual gratifications, with the body and not with the spirit, it must needs be so. The body so situated places the spirit at the mercy of the adversaries. But the holiday that is associated with the rest of body and refreshment of spirit is far from being such. When the bodily powers which have been drained by overtaxing work are recuperated by genial and moderate rest, when the mind, vexed and harassed by the worries and anxieties of daily toil, is refreshed by moderate amusement, and by being relaxed and plunged for a while in oblivion of anxious care, the while it is braced and stimulated by pleasant change, when this is so, a gentle calm pervades the spirit, and renders it peculiarly open to the beneficent influences of the heavenly guardians. Thus the power of angel ministry is strengthened, and the plans of the most powerful adversaries are set at naught. You must progress far in knowledge of spirit guidance and of the duties you owe to yourselves before your national holidays become aught but opportunities for the degradation of your people. The holiday that is marked by riot and debauchery, by sensuality and gambling, and evil, angry passion and despair, This is no holy day to us, but one to be dreaded and watched and prayed over. God help and guard the blind souls in their insensate folly. I find that our séance was disturbed at this time by some erratic manifestations, and an attempt to obtain photographs of some of the communicating spirits resulted in failure.